Okay, good evening and welcome everyone again. And really glad you're all here and glad to continue the study together. Okay, so here's what's going on tonight. All right, the past three classes, we dealt with some very general concepts. Just quick review where we're at. We dealt first with general concepts about prayer, sort of the bigger picture, where it's not just the wish list, but it's a tool for building relationship with God, connection, a relationship, and a tool for self-assessment. We spoke about the need for both formal prayer in Jewish tradition and informal prayer, both. How the formal prayer gives us the words and the concepts by wholly knowledgeable people, 2,500 years ago and more, who wrote the right, knew how to approach God, knew what words to say, and gave us the words with their meaning and their mystical meaning and all that. And the importance of that, and at the same time, the importance of informal prayer, where it's just from the heart, in my own language, at my own time, adding that to the relationship with God as well, the importance of both of those. Last week, so the first 2 weeks, we spoke about those two general concepts. Last week, we started looking more about the words themselves. And we spent a considerable amount of time on the one of the most fundamental, most common words, which is Baruch, blessed. We ended with Atah and the idea of blessing God and what that is about. All right. Tonight, I want to continue looking at some of the practical aspects of prayer. And I want to start it with a verse in Psalms written by King David thousands of years ago. And it's a psalm that we recite on a regular basis. It's part of the liturgy. The psalm says, all my limbs, kol atzmosai, all my limbs will declare God who is like you. In other words, in prayer, we will find a component, not just the thoughts that we think, not just the words that we say, but actually actions that we do that are part of the prayer, that involve our physical body as part of the process as well. And I want to spend a few minutes to give some background and hopefully a little bit depth into some of those physical acts where our body participates. We have a lot to cover in breadth and depth tonight. So if you could right now, I would ask you to hold. If you have any questions or comments, if you want to chat, I will try to take note of them and bring up what's relevant to the point that I'm at in the discussion, or wait till afterwards and I will give time. I'll make sure there's time tonight to hopefully to question and answer and discussion at the end. Okay, so to do this, I want to look at the Amida prayer again. And again, to remember, the Amida prayer is a 2,500-year-old, 2,500-year-old collection of 19 little paragraphs. This is the main part of every one of our formal prayer services, is the Amida. It's alternatively called the Shmona Esrei, because originally it had Shmona Esrei in Hebrew means 18, it had 18 little sections. Now there's one more, it's a 19th section, but it's a small prayer, 19 little short prayers, again, starting with praise, going to requests, and gratitude and thanks. Those are the three fundamental components, and the Amida's got a good dose of each one of those. Okay, so in terms of our, what I mean about physical involvement is, for example, this, the Amida, the rule is that if at all possible, it is obligatory to be standing when saying the Amida. And in fact, as I mentioned earlier, that's where it gets its name. It's Amida in Hebrew means standing. Standing is so important. The ritual of standing seems to be so important that the prayer gets its name from that stance position that we take, which is to be standing upright. We're not sitting, not lying down, not leaning, not even leaning, just standing up. Okay, so why do we stand? An act of respect. Why specifically at the Amida? Right? So as we've discussed before, that while the entire prayer, everything we do when we pray is either speaking about God or speaking to Him, but it's still speaking from some kind of a distance. Well, we are taught the metaphysical, spiritual truth that we are taught about that prayer, the Amida, is that we are standing, it's called Omeid Lifnei HaMelech, standing before the king. The Amida is on one opportunity, three times a day, four times a day on Shabbos, five times a day on Yom Kippur. But it's our opportunity to stand before God one-on-one and present those praises, those requests, those give those thanks, build the relationship, not from a distance, but literally in the almost the face-to-face, in the Omeg, standing before the king. And so that's why it's unique, and that's why we stand out of respect, okay? But here's a very interesting thing. The actual protocol, you may be familiar with this. If not, it's very important to know. The actual protocol is to stand with our 2 feet together. Stand with our feet together. That is the rule as it's brought down, and that's considered an important part of the Amidah. That's how it's to be done. Right? Again, as I mentioned last week, if you're on a plane and the time of davening is a prayer services, it's going to be too late. It's going to be dark by the time you land and you haven't done the afternoon service and you're going to do that, then you do it in your seat, if that's what's necessary. But the ideal absolutely is that if at all possible, it is obligatory to do it standing, and it should be standing with your feet together. So why is that? Why? What's the importance and what's the symbolic meaning of this idea of the feet being together? So to understand that, I think I have to give a little background. Okay, the background is that in Jewish tradition, so we'll get back to this specific item in a moment, but I want to give the background. In Jewish tradition, there is a lot of talk about malachim. Malachim is the Hebrew, what we call in English, angels. Okay? So in Jewish tradition, we have this idea. It's found in the scriptures. It's found extensively in the oral tradition and the Talmud and throughout Jewish the long Jewish history. This idea of angels comes up a lot. Angels, our understanding is that these are spiritual beings through which God in his wisdom, whether we understand why or not, has decided, right, to interact with his world. He does it through malachim. Malachim in Hebrew really means agents. Agents, one that's sent to do a mission. And there are these spiritual forces, if you will, or beings, if you will. Right? They're no less real and no less creations of God. But that they are spiritual beings or emanations or energies or forces that God has created through which he interacts with his world. Now, although they're not physical, when you read about them in the scriptures, in the books of the prophets, there are prophets who had visions of what's going on in heaven. So the prophets, Isaiah, Ezekiel, some of the prophets from thousands of years ago who wrote the books that are part of our canon of the Tanakh, of the scriptures, the Holy Scriptures, describe the angels using physical terms. They do that also about God. The Torah does that. God said. God doesn't have vocal cords. He's not physical. How could God say? What does that mean? He spoke. He saw. He doesn't have eyes. It says that the eyes of God, last week's Torah portion, the eyes of God are on the land of Israel at all times. These are all metaphor. They're using human terms, physical terms, because if you try to describe God or even angels, spiritual beings as they really are, we don't have the language, and we don't have the understanding to be able to describe it properly. So we use this physical metaphor to describe. But the metaphor is an allegory, a metaphor that somehow the spiritual reality that we are describing is reflected in these physical terms. So we're describing a spiritual reality. Angels are created, but they're spiritual beings, not like us that are physical, but spiritual beings, right? But we're describing them in physical terms to somehow capture, to some degree, you know, to reflect terms that reflect the spiritual reality in the physical terms. That's what you find. So here's what we find. When Isaiah has a vision of the heavens opened up before him, and he sees the angels singing praises to God, they recognize God and they're singing praises to God, he describes them as standing. And describes them as, he says, their legs, and their legs, plural, was a singular leg. The angels are described, again, they don't have legs or feet the way we have them all together, but there's some spiritual aspect that we'll try to explore what that is reflected by this physical term of having a single leg. In any event, in Jewish traditional sources, it says that when you get up before God to pray, you should position yourself like an angel in heaven singing praises to God, where the best description we have of those angels is they're standing on one leg. And therefore, we put our 2 legs together to fulfill exactly what it says about the angels. Their legs were like one leg. Their legs was a singular leg. So we try to replicate that to the best of our ability, stand on one leg. So first of all, before I go on to the point that what I think is a deep understanding of what does this mean? They have one leg and we should be like that. Before anything else, this is an absolutely powerful message of how to see ourselves when we're davening. You know, the angels sing praises of God. They appreciate what God is. There's less barriers between them and God than we have. They're spiritual beings in God's dimension in the heavens. And they appreciate God, so they sing these praises. They can't hold themselves back. They sing these praises. We're people going to ask for things. That's what we're doing when we pray, right? But we should see ourselves like angels singing praises to God, because again, the tool, prayer is a tool of connection to God, right? So it's amazing that we should see ourselves when we're davening. I'm not this lowly being begging for some, I'm connecting to God in a powerful way, like an angel in heaven connecting to God. That's how we're supposed to see ourselves. And to remind ourselves of this, as we often do in Jewish tradition, we act something out symbolically to remind us of a certain spiritual and metaphysical truth. So stand with one with your legs together. Okay, so what does this mean, though, this idea of one leg? I think it goes a lot deeper. And the answer is like this. There's one fundamental prerequisite to asking God for things, something that we need to have in order to be able to ask God for things and to hope that that request will be granted. The prerequisite is to understand and to internalize that although in Jewish tradition we don't rely on miracles and we need to put an effort into things, all these things we're going to ask for, wisdom and health and wealth and success, everything we ask for, we need to put efforts in. We can't just sit back and wait for God to give it to us, right? So nevertheless, we need to realize that that's what God demands of us that we do. However, at the end of the day, it's in God's hands and I'm unable to do anything for myself if he's not going to bless my handiwork. I don't have any ability on my own. I am totally insecure. The prerequisite for prayer is, while in other areas of life a feeling of insecurity might be seen as a flaw, in prayer, standing before God and saying, this is absolutely, without your help, I am nowhere, I have no other resource, no way to get this other than turning to you. The more we can internalize that prayer, that feeling, the stronger our prayer is, the more correct our prayer is. Feeling a lack of security on my own, a lack of independent security without God, is a prerequisite for successful prayer, right? And so here's the imagery to think of. Okay, imagine that if I was in front of the class, I would stand up. You won't see my feet anyway. But imagine that someone's standing there with their 2 feet apart, right, in a normal secure stance. You're walking by and you brush against them. What's going to happen? They might, you know, move a drop and they're fine. Nothing's going to happen. Picture now that same degree of a slight push. Not on purpose, you walk by, a slight push, but they're standing on one leg. Or even with 2 legs, but the legs are together. It takes much, much, much less effort to knock them over if they're standing on one leg or 2 legs together. Right? Single leg is the idea of total dependence, of insecurity, not having a firm stance on my own. That's symbolically what the idea of the single leg is. The angels in heaven, there's less barriers between them and God. They're spiritual beings. They appreciate God greater than we can. They have a better appreciation. It's more real to them. And so they feel their nothingness, their total insecurity on their own in the face of God. And so they're described as having one leg. Right? Our idea, when the rabbis tell us, when Jewish tradition says that the ritual, the proper way to stand for the Amidah is with my legs together, it's not just a formality. It's internalizing a message of lack of independent security. I don't have a firm stance without God. That's how I approach God. I approach God like the poor, like the pauper knocking on the door, it says in the Talmud, begging for something because I can't get it on my own. What do you mean? I have a job and I'm working hard and I put all this effort in. I went to school for so many years and I'm making all these contacts and I'm doing. That's all true because we have to do that. And then we have to ask God to bless that handiwork because we need to internalize that without him, we have nothing. The insecurity on my own, prerequisite, prayer 101, is to have that insecure stance independently to to recognize that my only security is relying on God, not on my own two feet. And so I stand with the one leg, like the angels, their two legs are like one leg. That's the first, I think this is a beautiful, to me, this is always a very beautiful, deeper understanding of what this ritual is about, Jewish rituals. You know, the problem with ritual is that, unfortunately, very often in our mind, it gets hyphenated with the word empty. Oh, ritual, oh, empty ritual. It's not true. Rituals are so, pardon the pun, but they're so rich with meaning, right, that and Jewish tradition, we have a lot of that, but we need to understand what is the deeper meaning of the ritual. So this is the first insight that I wanted to share. Okay, I want to move on from that idea of standing and standing with our feet together to the idea of bowing during the Amidah. So we bow at certain points during the Amidah, and basically there are the Talmud and the Code of Jewish Law is very, very clear that there are two places, and interestingly, only two places, two sections of the Amidah, when we're standing before God, that there are two places that we bow. The two sections are at the beginning of the Amidah. The very first section is what's called the blessing of the patriarchs. Each one of the blessings has a name, a theme. The first one is the patriarchs. And it talks about how God, you are the God, we connect to the fact that we come from these great ancestors, the patriarchs, who discovered God and developed that faith and belief in God and recognized God. And that's section number one. So here we bow. We bow at the very beginning, blessed are you. And at the end of the section, blessed are you. These two points is where the bowing is done. And the second part is near the end of the Amidah, where we have the Thanksgiving blessing. And we thank God for what he's given us. It's the beginning of that third section of the Amidah, from which it gets its name of Hoda'ah, Thanksgiving. It's Modim, that's this blessing. And there also at the beginning and at the end of this blessing, we do the bowing, right? So, by the way, before I close that, I should have showed you, I mean, as an aside, the Thanksgiving blessing is an awesome time to implement that which we spoke about including thoughts of customizing one's prayer to include thoughts of our own personal experiences. You know, many people do this, which is to stop before saying the words Modim Anachlo, thank you. And it's very elaborate and detailed here, but it's general. It's, you know, our lives are in your hands and our souls are in your custody and the miracles that are with us every day. It's general. It's very detailed, but it's general in the sense of miracles that are with us and the wonders and goodness that are with us, right? Each of us has experienced miracles and wonders and goodness in our lives, and stopping before the Modim to organize that in my head and say, God, I'm going to say these words now, and I have in mind this that you did to me and that that you did to me. It's an excellent, excellent opportunity to customize the prayer for personal use, so to speak, right? But these are the two places. As far as our discussion this evening, what's important to note is that these are the two parts of the Amidah where we bow. Okay, so last week after class, Carol asked me about why we only bow these two sections, not all 19. It would seem to make sense we should be bowing by each of them, which is a great question, and I thank you for it. I want to address that now, and I want to share two possible insights that have to do with the meaning of bowing and specifically the contents of these two prayers. So I want to tell you something very interesting. The first thing is that the Talmud says that actually there are two people, two individuals in history who are actually supposed to do more than the bowing that we do. Not just bow twice. The two are in temple times, you know, in the Temple Mount in Jerusalem used to contain the center of Jewish life, was the Holy Temple built by King Solomon and then destroyed by the Babylonians about 2,500 years ago, and then rebuilt close to 100 years later and stood for hundreds of years again and then destroyed by the Romans 2,000 years ago. Right? So those two temples, the Kohanim, the priests, did daily services in those temples. In the temple, people prayed also, but there were services that were done, offerings that were brought, and different rituals that were observed in the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. And probably the second highest position, leadership position of the Jewish people was the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. Second only to the king, King David or King Solomon, whoever the king happened to be, there was a royalty, a royal dynasty, and there was a monarchy, and there was a king. Those two are probably the two highest positions in Jewish life in the ancient world. And the halacha, Jewish law said, not relevant today, we don't have either, but Jewish law said that as opposed to us that bow down twice by the patriarchs and by the Thanksgiving, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, bows by every one of the 19 blessings. Every one of them, the Kohen Gadol would bow down. And the king would bow at the beginning and stay bowed down for the entire prayer until he finished the Amidah and then get back up. Right? In other words, the more power that one has, the more he or she is at risk of that power going to their head. And you need the more important to have the humility and the deference that symbolically the bowing implies, right? It's required of them. Okay, for the rest of us, just twice. Right? So the question is why? So one reason that's given actually is to not make yourself more pious than everybody else. Leave that for the king and for the high priest. And you just bow down twice. Don't try to make yourself a holy roller. There's an old Yiddishism, which is actually a very interesting phrase, which says about excessive humility, where the guy tells the other guy, you know, you're not so great that you need to be so humble. So calm down. You don't need to be so humble. You're not so great to begin with, right? So we shouldn't arrogate to ourselves. Oh, I'm one of those people who need to bow down the whole time. You're not so great that you need to be so humble. It's okay. That's one thing that's given. But in addition, that I want to say two more things about this. One is I would call it a delicate concept. It needs to be understood properly. It needs a lot of work, but I think there's a truth to it, which is that it is vital in Jewish tradition to be humble. Humility is one of the greatest things that we can do. Humility has a risk factor. The risk factor is that if we emphasize too much how humble and how nothing we are, it could end up being a negative. You know, there's a pitfall of being excessively humble, and that it not turn into meekness or not turn into anything negative, that lose my sense of accomplishment and drive. I mean, spiritually, to recognize how important I am before God, and that I'm not, you know, I got to balance being, I'm really a nothing in the big scheme of things, and yet God has so much appreciation for me and so much potential that he has given me, and he values my contribution so much. That's why I'm here, because he put me here, because he values my contribution. Balancing those two is an important tool, right? And so it could be the idea of bowing down at certain important points. I will discuss why these two points are so important, but not doing it excessively might have something to do with this balance of, you know, getting the right balance of humility / self-esteem, and not just bowing all the time. The king and the high priest, they need it. Us, we need a good dose of the other thing also, of not being excessively humble. That might be an important point. That needs more work, but what I do want to say is that about these two blessings, again, the one about the patriarchs and the one about the Thanksgiving, while we're bowing over the end, there's a deep and a beautiful understanding of it, which goes as follows. Right? We begin our prayer, the patriarch's blessing is we begin our prayer by connecting to God as the God of our ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Right? It makes perfect sense that we should want to follow in their ways. They discovered God, they connected God. Right? We should want to follow that spiritual path of these great people, which is amazing. But it's important when we do that, when we say, wow, we are the descendants of those people who discovered God and brought God to the world and established such a connection with God. I want to be like that also. It's important then to make a statement that no matter how much we do that, there's no comparison between my relatively feeble understanding and grasp of God's infinite greatness, right, and the far more profound understanding that was attained by these great spiritual giants, right? So we express humility when we connect ourselves and sell as our model, and we should have them as a model, to be like Abraham, be like Isaac, be like the patriarchs and matriarchs, to be great, connected to God like they were, and to follow in their ways. But we express our humble recognition that we're not there, we're not them, we're not going to be them. Right? We're not going to get to their understanding and their level of connection. So when we mention their relationship with God, we humbly bow and express our comparatively humble abilities. And the second time we do that, right, I'm going to finish with this, is at the modim, the Thanksgiving. And again, it goes into great detail And it talks about the wonders and miracles that are with us every day. Miracles aren't just once in a thousand years. Miracles are every single day of our life. And we recognize that. But we also recognize that as much as we recognize it, we fall short. We're not there. That's also the time for humility. When we connect to the greatness and the praises and the connection of God of the patriarchs, and when we express our thanks, those are both important times to say that as much as I have that, I recognize that I really don't. Right? I don't fully have the understanding, the appreciation of what God has done for me, nor the understanding of what a debt of gratitude that imposes upon me. I recognize that. And so that might be the two places that where we have our humility that we're called upon to express. Those are the two places we bow at the patriarchs and we bow at the Thanksgiving. Okay, so just a summary, right? So in review, we talked about going from the concept of prayer and the words of prayer to our physical involvement, the physical symbolic acts that we do with our body to enhance the prayer, the idea of standing, yeah, like the angels, and the importance of the idea of standing because we're in the presence of God, I mean, and the idea of standing with our feet together, our legs together, like the angels, the importance of that feeling of lack of independence when I approach God, the one leg, not the firm two legs, but the shaky one leg stance before God. Right? We spoke about the bowing and the humility that it expresses. Talk about the balance of humility and self-esteem to get that proper balance. And finally, the need specifically to express humility when we are drawing on, you know, it's like name dropping. We start the Amidah, we want to ask God for all these things. It's kind of like, you know, yeah, you walk into a hotel and you ask for the room. They say, sorry, we're all booked for the night. It's 2 a.m, you're dead tired, you got to stay at the hotel, you know? So they say, well, you know, by the way, my uncle is, I'm very good friends with the brother-in-law of the CEO of the chain, whatever, you know, and all of a sudden they find the space for you, right? So name dropping sometimes is good. We start our army down, we say we are the descendants of these great, great people, and we want to connect who they are, but we recognize that we're not going to get to where they were in their appreciation of God. And we express our thanksgiving to God for all he's done for us, and we try to increase that constantly. It's an ongoing exercise to recognize more and more, not to take for granted what God has done, but we also bow in humility and say, I know I'm going to fall short. As much as I appreciate it and express it, I don't fully appreciate it, and I can't fully express it, and I don't fully internalize the debt of gratitude that it put upon me.